In 1990, Douglas wrote and presented a TV documentary called Hyperland, a kind of technophobe's guide to communications technology. In this program, Douglas falls asleep in front of the TV and dreams of a future time when he can play a more active role in selecting data from a multimedia information landscape. To assist and guide him in this, he creates a software agent, played by Tom Baker, who makes a sudden appearance to rescue him from a terminal case of TV boredom.
Are you tired of linear, non-interactive television, Mr. Adams? Don't even know what linear, non-interactive television means, Mr. Adams? Are you tired, Mr. Adams, of the sort of television that just happens at you? That you just sit in front of like a couch potato? That doesn't involve you? Come on, interact with me.
Wait a minute.
Yes, what is it you want to know?
Who the hell are you?
Me? Oh, I'm just him. My name is Tom, and I'm your agent. May I ask if you know what that means?
You want 15%?
It means that I'm here to do your every slightest bidding, to fetch and carry for you, to work tirelessly and selflessly on your behalf, always ready, always willing, no job too small or too menial.
Are you sure you mean agent?
I mean that I'm a software agent. I am merely a simulacrum, an artificial and completely customizable personality, and I only exist as what we call an application in your computer. I have the honor to provide instant access to every piece of information stored digitally anywhere in the world. Any picture or film, any sound, any book, any statistic, any fact, any connection between anything you care to think of, you have only to tell me, and it will be my humble duty to find it for you and to present it to you for your interactive pleasure. Is there anything I can do for you now, Mr. Adams, sir?
Well, yes, you can stop being so obsequious for a start.
It will be my very great and profound pleasure to be less obsequious, O Master. I am, as I humbly mentioned to you a moment ago, fully customizable. Allow me to present you with my control panel. Would you care to alter me in any way which takes your fancy? Just touch the appropriate control.
Okay, Buster. What do you want now? Get a bloody move on, can't ya?
Good. What would you like to find out about now?
Hang on, I'm rather enjoying this. What else can we change?
As you can see, there's nothing about me at all, God bless your face. There isn't completely customizable 110% in any way you like, Sheila.
There is a new version of the software due out any minute now, which will, of course, be completely reliable.
Look, what is this thing? Does it have a name?
It has lots of names.
All right. Who invented it?
Lots of people invented it. Do you want to hear about a few of them?
Maybe. Just a little bit.
One of the first was an American government scientist called Vannevar Bush. He thought of it as long ago as 1945.
1945?
Then there's Ted Nelson, who developed the idea of hypertext in the 1960s. From the 1970s onwards, there's been a group of people working at what's now called the Media Lab at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Then, in the late 1980s, came the Multimedia Lab in San Francisco. In the early 1990s, Robert Abel developed a pioneering example of multimedia based on Picasso's painting Guernica.
Can I just interrupt you a moment?
Oh, absolutely, at any moment. That's the whole point.
What are those things?
They are called microns. They were invented by a Norwegian called Hans Peter Bronmo at MIT in 1989. Try touching him.
A micron is a motion icon. It's motion because it's a sequence of frames that are run in a loop. And it's an icon because it's a representation. It's used as a representation for an idea or a concept or a piece of information in some form. Imagine, for example, that you are watching this interview with me, and I make a reference to Ted Nelson. Now, Ted Nelson was the person who, back in the 60s, coined...
I thought of the idea of hypertext in the fall of 1960, but not under that name. And for years, I tried to explain the idea to people everywhere. And apparently, most people thought I was literally insane. But it seemed so clear to me from the very beginning that writing should not be sequential, because the problems we all have in writing sequential prose derive from the fact that we're trying to make it all lie down in one long string. And if we could only break it up into different chunks that the reader could choose, why, then we wouldn't have to decide what goes in and what goes out. We could just...
Okay, so how do I find something? Like, how do I find my way back?
You just ask me.
I just did.
Or you can touch the go back button, which is the thing that looks like a minimalist fish hook.
So, what do I do now?
May I just make a point here?
Can I stop you?
Of course. But the point I wanted to make was that you don't have to ask me what you have to do all the time. Do whatever you want.
I'm doing what I want. I'm telling you that I don't know what to do. I'm completely lost.
Then you need a guide.
Find me one.
Now you're getting the idea. Look, why don't we just start at the beginning?
The program was by its very nature a visual one, and it is difficult to follow any further in sound only, but it covered an enormous range of ideas, explaining in fairly simple terms the functions of browsers, hyperlinks, and search engines. It illustrated well a number of complex issues. Douglas's vision of interactive storytelling, whereby you can choose different paths through a drama. The engineering of artificial intelligence. The interactive fantasy world, such as we find in modern computer games, and the concept of artificial or virtual reality. It's interesting to look back and see how much he got right and how much he didn't. But for all that, it was for its time an innovative program. 10 years later, in part four of his series Hitchhiker's Guide to the Future, Douglas was taking a revised look at the future of computer technology.